Mr. Schroeder, good morning to you.
May it please the court, my name is Kim Schroeder, I represent the appellant in this matter. There are actually three pending cases as a result emanating from the accident on June 7th of 2012. Obviously, the wrongful death case of Raven Addie Cruz and Edgar Cruz's case and this particular case. On June 7th, 2012, Carlos Lopez went to work at 6:45 a.m. and drove truck number 10 until 5:30 p.m. Exhibit 16, page 18. On June 7th, 2012, Lyle Carmen came to work at noon and drove truck number 7 until 3:30 p.m. Exhibit 14, page 14. Warner was solely in control of the time and the place. The millions were loaded into Lyle Carmen's truck and where the millions were ultimately dumped. No one but Warner was in total control of the work site on June 7th. Where the truck was parked overnight, where the fuel was purchased, or the maintenance on the truck performed is totally immaterial.
Did this accident happen at the work site?
Pardon?
Did this accident happen at the work site?
I'm still not hearing you, I'm sorry.
Did this accident happen at the work site?
It happened on Interstate 80.
Is that...
It's hard to say whether it was at the work site or not, because I don't know if the contract defined what the work site was. It was clearly, the traffic had slowed down to a one-lane traffic, so that, in my mind, suggested it did happen at the work site. Otherwise, they wouldn't reduce two-lane traffic to one-lane traffic. Judge Ott found that there were, a quote, couple of factors that may augur in favor of finding that Carmen was a common law employee, but the overwhelming facts are that Lopez was an independent contractor. What overwhelming facts? Judge Ott didn't cite one fact that fit into this overwhelming concept that Lopez was an independent contractor. The appellee on page 16 of their brief state that Warner was only in control of the time and the place the millings were loaded into Lopez's truck and where the millings were ultimately dumped. That would be the entire time Carmen was on the job site. The appellee contends that Lopez had an independent contractor agreement with Warner. There is no such agreement unless the appellee is referring to the unsigned lease agreement that is in evidence. Exhibit 20, one page of the construction contract consisting in excess of 200 pages provides that Warner must ensure that the safety of the public is provided for. They were paid to do so.
Who is that contract between?
Pardon?
Who are the parties to that contract?
Warner Construction and the State of Nebraska.
What authority do you have that support your argument that actually creates a non-delegable duty?
That it's not a delegable duty?
Yes.
Well, because they contracted for that duty.
So you say that creates that duty on behalf of Warner?
Absolutely that is.
Do you have any authority to support that?
I have absolutely no authority whatsoever. I can tell you I've spent literally hours looking for a similar case. There are a number of cases in a workers' compensation arena that suggest that when you contractually obligate yourself for the safety of employees, of not only of the contractor, but the subcontractor, you have a non-delegable duty. I could not find one case in this state or one case in the United States of America where the facts are similar with respect to a construction contract. Now, maybe Mr. Keith found one, and if he did, he's not telling us, but I believe it is a non-delegable duty by contract. Yes, sir. I cited Parrish for the proposition that an employer has a non-delegable duty to protect another from harm caused by the contractor. Parrish cited Restatement of Torts 2nd, Section 414 in support thereof. However, in Gayton v. Walmart, as cited by the appellee Judge Stephan, accurately pointed out to me that it's Section 416 of the 2nd Restatement of Torts because it does not apply to personal injury claims to employees or subcontractors against the general contractor or owners, but it does apply to a peculiar risk of physical harm to others, such as Raven Eddie Cruz. Restatement, it ports section 416. One who employs an independent contractor to do work which the employer should recognize as likely to create during its progress a peculiar risk of physical harm to others, unless special precautions are taken, is subject to liability for physical harm caused by them by the failure of the contractor to exercise reasonable care to take such precautions, even though the employer has provided for such precautions in the contract or otherwise.
So is your position that trucking then it has inherent special risks or dangers associated with it?
Absolutely. Driving down the road 10-yard dump trucks.
And it has, do you have...
in excess of 10,000 pounds.
Do you have authority to support that?
No, not any particular authority.
Okay.
There are 10 factors in determining whether a person is an employee of an employee or an independent contractor. But not one single test is based on all of them. It should be based on all of the facts in the case. There are two recognized exceptions to the general rule that an employer is not responsible for the acts of an independent contractor. The employer of an independent contractor may be vicariously liable to a third party if, one, if the employer retains control over the contractor's work, or, and I emphasize, or, if by rule or statute the employer has a non-delegable duty to protect another from harm caused by the contractor. We also believe that Lyle Carman was a statutory employee pursuant to Section 390.5 of the Federal Motor Carrier Safety Regulations. Lopez had a personal file for Carman, but it lacked any evidence of an initial drug testing or any random test. Warner did not have actual knowledge or constructive knowledge of Carman's qualifications or driving record, but could and should have obtained such knowledge. All Warner had to do was ask Mr. Lopez to produce Lyle Carman's driving file, and they would have discovered that Lyle Carman was not tested initially as required by law or subject to any random tests. Had they done that, Lyle Carman would have never been in that truck on June 7th of 2012. I'm asking this court to reverse Judge Ott's summary judgment and return this so that 12 men and women can decide whether Lyle Carman was a common law employee. Thank you.
Counsel, before you sit down, after the court granted summary judgment in favor of Warner,
yes.
You asked for and were granted summary judgment regarding the claim against the remaining two defendants.
That's the only way we could get the case here.
So
we came up here on the wrongful death case, and it was sent back because you suggested it wasn't a final order.
I have a question about the summary judgment involving the other two defendants.
Yes.
The amount of damages was set at the specials, the medical specials.
Yes.
And only the medical specials. Yes. Is that significant to our analysis?
No.
Why not?
Because it's a judgment.
A judgment for medical specials only.
Right.
Does it have any impact on whether, on any damages, that any additional claims for damages?
Well, Lopez Trucking or Mr. Lopez has offered the policy limits in the wrongful death case. So there's no insurance left. So it does impact.
This is the case involving just one injury, correct?
That's correct.
And the judgment is for the medical specials only?
That's correct.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you very much. Mr. Keith, good morning to you.
May it please the court, my name is Rob Keith. I'm one of the attorneys for the defendant, Appley Warner Construction. The district court properly dismissed this case pursuant to Warner's motion for summary judgment, finding that a general contractor, independent contractor relationship existed between Warner and its subcontractor, Lopez Trucking. you'll hear the name Lopez Trucking or Carlos Lopez as the same entity. He was not incorporated at the time. Lopez Trucking was hired by Werner Construction to come to a job site at Interstate 80 and Highway 77 called the Air Park Job. And what the record will show is that Werner's employee called all kinds of independent contractors to say, hey, we're going to be taking the surface off the interstate. We need someone to haul and dump the millings. As a result, a lot of independent contractors sent trucks out to the job site who lined up off the interstate and one by one came up behind Werner's milling equipment, dumped the millings into the back, drove it west, and dumped it in a lot, and came back if they wanted to. Now, in this case, there's a couple of things that the appellant has brought up that says that he has three arguments. One, that Lopez's employee, Lyle Carmen, was a common law employee of Werner Construction. That if he wasn't, he was a statutory employee under the FMSCR. And third, if a general contractor or independent contractor relationship exists, an exception applies for the non-delegable duty the court mentioned earlier. There are facts that apply to all three scenarios that are very important to this analysis.
Let's speak to the last one first.
Yes.
How do you respond to the non-delegable duty argument that was raised regarding drug tests from Mr. Lopez trucking drivers?
Well, the series of cases has indicated very clearly there are three exceptions. The right to control, that has to be more than substantial. Werner exerted no control over Carmen at all. Number two, control of the premises. This isn't a safe workplace case. This is on the Interstate 80 as he's returning back towards Lincoln. Number three, a statute or rule that imposes a specific duty. In that case, what he's alleging is the Federal Motor Carrier Safety Regulation apply, creating some kind of duty on behalf of Werner, but it does not, as I'll get into a second.
What I'm specifically relating to is that Werner created such a duty for itself in its bid process with the state of Nebraska. How do you respond to that?
It did not. What the provision he's referring to is a very general contract provision that's in every standard contract that says you will follow safety regulations. It does not create a special duty on behalf of that eliminates any kind of general contractor, independent contractor relationship, creating a non-delegable duty to go look at each one of their independent contractors' driver's files. And as stated by counsel, there is no case that says a contract provision creates a non-delegable duty. It has to be a statute or a regulation. In this case, the only one that's been cited, was the Federal Motor Carrier Safety Regulations. So it is the appellee's position. There is no non-delegable duty exception to the facts in this case. A couple of things to consider in terms of the common law employee argument. One is that it is a question of law when the facts are not in dispute. And in this case, the facts are not in dispute. It's also important to remember that general contractors under Nebraska law can control some of the procedures necessary to assure performance is done to contract. And that is exactly what was done here. We called a bunch of independent contractors, come out, all you have to do is take the millings from point A, drop them off at point B. You don't have to come. You can send more than one truck. You can send whatever truck you want to send. You can send whatever driver you want to send. All we care about is getting it from point A to point B. Now, the appellant mentioned 10 factors in which the courts look at to determine whether a common law employment. And the most important one is control. And there is no evidence that Werner exerted any control over Lopez or Lopez's driver in this incident. Lopez told Carmen when to come to work, where to go, what to do, and how to do it. He paid Carmen directly, withheld taxes, provided insurance. Lopez paid for the fuel of the truck. Lopez owned the truck that was involved in the accident. Lopez had no exclusive agreement with Werner Construction to haul millings. In other words, Lopez could have gone to any job site in the state of Nebraska and hauled millings if he found a better price. The testimony from the Werner employees indicated they didn't even know who Lyle Carmen was. They had no idea where the truck was at the time of the accident, where it was going. They had no communication with him while he was driving. They did not, as appellant noted, have any information constructed or actual of Carmen's driver's history. Carmen had never been a Werner employee. Werner paid Lopez, Lopez then paid Carmen. Then, so second of all, there is no facts to show that there is any control exerted by Werner over Lopez or Carmen. It was clearly a general contractor, independent contractor agreement. The second route is that Carmen was a statutory employee of Werner under the federal motor carrier safety regulations. This is a misdirection because courts, when determining whether the FMSER applies, looks at the specific transaction, not the overlying facts. And what's important to note here, yeah, go ahead.
Well, was Werner acting as a motor carrier?
No.
In its relationships with Lopez Trucking?
Not at all, no. The key where the distraction comes is that Werner has its own DOT number, but for this specific transaction, it had hired Lopez, who has its own DOT number, who then hired Carmen as an employee. Lopez was the motor carrier and was obligated to keep a driver file, perform a road test, perform a drug test, and do all those things. And frankly, that's why Lopez is a defendant in the case and made the offer that counsel mentioned in his argument. So what is also important to note is that he does not cite a single case to support the contention that Werner, even though it has its own DOT number, that hires an independent contractor with a DOT number, is somehow vicariously responsible for that. In fact, I think the strongest argument that there's no obligation under Werner because it's not the motor carrier under the federal motor carrier safety regulations is that we are to interpret statutes and regulations so we don't have absurd conclusions. And could you imagine the construction industry if we were to apply a rule that said general contractors under the federal motor carrier safety regulations that have their own DOT number, yet hire an independent contractor with a DOT number, now have an employee relationship with those drivers of the independent contractor, requiring the general to keep a driver file.
Simply because it has a DOT number?
That's it. That's the only reason. The rule does apply that the appellant chooses when Werner has the DOT number, hires somebody else to drive under its DOT number. But that's not the case here. Lopez has its own DOT number, as well as the other independent contractors that were out obtaining millings at the site at the time that this accident occurred. Finally, there are two comments. One, there was some mention in the appellant's brief about this lease. The lease is a red herring. It was unsigned by the parties. Lopez Trucking never even heard of it and admitted so in his deposition. And if you look at it, specifically subpart 5 of the termination clause, it says that the lease agreement can be terminated by any time and by either party. After the termination of this agreement, the lessee shall return the equipment to the control of the lessor. Werner did not lease any equipment to Lopez Construction related to this transaction. Lopez was driving its own truck. What happened is that Werner had used Lopez on multiple jobs and had started the draft of a contract that we had to turn over in discovery, but it didn't apply to this transaction. It has nothing to do with this case. So the last argument that's made is the non-delegable duty. As we touched on earlier, Lopez controlled Carmen, its driver, had his file, did his testing, made sure he had his road test, and did those things. Now, number two, the control exception to the non-delegable duty rule has to be substantial. We have to show substantial control, and it's our place that there is no issue of material fact that we controlled anything other than taking millings from point A to point B. The second one is control of the premises. This did not apply to this factual situation. Number three is the statute exception, which the FMSER does not apply to Werner. And four, the special risks or dangers that you mentioned earlier. Truck driving is not an ultra-hazardous activity. It does not require anything more than what common risk is. Drive the speed limit, make sure you follow the rules of the road of that nature.
Do you have any authority that states that?
Not for trucks specifically, but if you look at the body of law, it's very clear that we cannot start identifying common risks as ultra-hazardous, or the hole would be so big that the exception under the non-delegable rule would make general contractors vicariously liable for so many factors. If driving were to be considered ultra-hazardous, then there would be no protection from vicarious liability in this situation involving a vehicle. Defendant Appellee Werner Construction thanks the court for its time and would ask the court to uphold the lower court's proper ruling dismissing this case on on summary judgment.
I'm sorry to interrupt you before you sit down.
That's okay.
I have a question about the order on summary judgment.
Yes.
When Judge Ott was discussing the kind factors, those 10 factors, he says in the order this, that a couple of factors may augur in favor of the plaintiff's claim, given the standard of review, but the overwhelming factors establish a finding that the independent contractor status in this case, and I conclude that a genuine issue sufficient to defeat Werner's motion has not been established. Is that the sort of language that you would expect to see in a summary judgment order or in a final judgment order after a trial on the merits?
I would prefer not to have the augur in the direction of language in a motion for summary judgment, but the key there is two responses to that. One, there's no genuine issue of material fact that augurs in favor of the appellant's position. Number two, in a general contractor, independent contractor situation, you are going to have some factors of control. That was what was identified in the Kime case is that you have to have communication between general and independent to say, we need you to do A and take it to B. There has to be a minimum. So there are always going to be factors.
A balancing of factors.
In some way, shape, or form, but it still has to rise to the level of a genuine issue of a material fact to destroy a general contractor, independent contractor protective relationship for liability purposes.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you very much. Do we have any time for rebuttal? 57 seconds, Mr. Schroeder.
Thank you. I wanted to respond to the existence of the DOT operating authority. The regulatory guidance to 49 CFR section 390.5 has in those regulations questions and answers. Here's the question. Question 17. May a motor carrier that employs owner operators who have their own operating authority issued by the ICC or the Surface Transportation Board transfer the responsibility for compliance with the FMCSRs to the owner operators? Guidance. No. The term employee is defined by section 390.5 specifically includes an independent contractor employed by a motor carrier. The existence of operating authority has no bearing on this issue. The motor carrier is therefore responsible for the compliance with the FMCSRs by the driver employees, including those who are owner operators. Thank you.
Thank you very much. The next